Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you guys from Phoenix, Arizona. And of course, as always, this is a Nerd of Balls production. So, Jonathan Mayberry is on the show. Holy shit. As a writer, I look up to this guy. He gives so much creativity, inspiration, motivation as a writer. You know, I'm a published guy, of course, too. And taking a look at his career with books and comics, and, you know, he created V-Wars and wrote it, like, V-Wars comic, which is now in 8 days as of this recording, gonna be on Netflix. So if you guys are watching this whenever, make sure to tune in to Netflix and watch the first 10 episodes of V-Wars. You're gonna love it. So we talk about horror, we talk about writing in general, you know, helpful tips and trades and whatnot that I'm definitely gonna take care of and really, really, really get into. And if you guys want to stay tuned more with the Comic Chronicle podcast, you guys can follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com. So thanks for everyone tuning in this episode. Hopefully you guys enjoy it and take a little bit from it, as always. And now, without further ado, without me rambling anymore, let's get into my talk with Jonathan Mayberry. And we're recording. Jonathan, welcome to the show, good man.
Happy to be here, man.
Thank you, thank you. Now, you, sir, are such a big-time writer, to say the least, and I have to ask, because it's an honor to have you here, one, because you got to be living, like, the time of your life right now, to say the least.
It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's really that time where, how is it being on your side of things? Because you work a lot, to say the least, or at least it seems like you work a lot. But, I mean, like, your resume is, like, huge and whatnot, but, like, it seems like you work a lot. Like, I gotta ask, as a fellow writer, because it's killing me. How do you have time to do it?
Well, I mean, I'm a full-time writer, so, I mean, that's my day job. So, at very least, I'm putting in 40 hours a week, if not more, usually 50 or 60 hours a week. But also, I'm a high-output writer. Not every writer writes at the same speed. I have a buddy who does one literary mystery novel every 3 years, and that's the speed he likes.
Jesus.
It would drive me nuts. So you find the lane that you drive most efficiently in, and where you're having the most fun, and that's what you do. I know that I didn't start out this fast. Well, actually, that's kind of a lie. I was trained to be this fast because I went to journalism school rather than creative writing school. And journalism school, it's all about, you know, this is the story, get the facts, write a draft, you know, quick and dirty, clean it in the rewrite and move on. So I had that kind of built into me. But when I got to fiction, you know, it took me 3.5 years to write my first novel. And, you know, with each book, you learn from your process. Mm-hmm. So the last novel I wrote, Lost Roads, which will be out in August of next year, you know, took me about 3 months to write.
Oh, shit. That's not bad. So you're like Stephen King. You're just popping them out.
Well, it's what makes me happy. I know when I have more time to write a book, I tend to wander a little bit and wind up having to cut a lot of self-indulgent stuff out that really doesn't serve the story. I wrote it just because I had the time and because I thought it was fun. Mm. But when I write on a deadline, and sometimes it's a self-imposed deadline, sometimes it's a professional deadline, I like to keep the deadlines tight because I get in there and the old journalism instincts kick in. I just, you know, dive right into what's the story, what's the best way to tell the story, and how do we get this puppy moving.
I dig that. I dig that hard. Like, a few friends of mine have started as a journalist, but I've never even asked them, like, anything about it. But are writers now for, like, scripts and for filmmaking and such. Like, was it easy to get into storytelling, or was it difficult, man? Like, be like, okay, I'm not telling this, because for journalism, it seems like a different beast. I wouldn't know, but it seems like a different beast compared to storytelling.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, even though I was trained as a newspaper writer, I actually didn't write for newspapers. It's one of the few things I haven't done in writing. I wound up going right into magazine feature writing when I was still in college. Doing features and how-to articles at first for things like Black Belt Magazine and Inside Kung Fu and, you know, all the martial arts magazines.
Yeah, very nice.
You know, write what you know, and I've been doing this since I was six, you know, jiu-jitsu. But along the way, I started writing other things. I did a couple experimental plays, did greeting cards, did technical manuals, college textbooks, you know, pretty much anything that had words, had a paycheck attached to it, I'd give it a shot. But then there was a transition moment between that and writing fiction. I had a 4-book deal with a small press in Pennsylvania, And the first three books I did were all martial arts books. So, but we never clarified what the third book was going to be, and the publisher assumed that I would just write another martial arts book. And, you know, it happens with assumptions. So what I told him I wanted to do was a book on the folklore of vampires, werewolves, and other supernatural predators around the world throughout history.
Ooh.
And it was a long moment of just crickets. And he's like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah, that's not good when you hear the crickets. You're like, oh, shit.
Oh, no. It was a total... And he's half smiling, thinking this is a joke. That I'm, you know, I'm spoofing him. So I said, no. My grandmother was into, you know, what you might call the larger world. She was pretty much an old lady version of Luna Lovegood from Harry Potter.
Oh, that's
the kid who believed in everything. That was my grandmother.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, she was absolutely wonderful, too. So I knew about the folkloric versions of monsters well before I knew the Universal or Hammer Films versions. So I said I wanted to do the book, and he fought me on it, and he conceded it, but had one condition. I had to write it under a pen name.
Ooh.
So I wrote it as The Vampire Slayer's Field Guide to the Undead by Shane MacDougall. Shane is Scottish for John, and MacDougall's one of the various Scottish clans from which my family is descended. So, you know, easy pen name. But the problem is, the book outsold my martial arts books like 30-1.
Oh, Jesus.
And I got on the radar of the horror crowd pretty solidly. It was on the recommendation list for the Stoker Awards. It wasn't on the final ballot. It was on the recommendation list, which is how I found out there was a Horror Writers Association. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
But I didn't know how to write fiction. So I actually had to teach myself how to write fiction. I'd never taken a creative writing course. So one of the reasons it took, you know, 3.5 years for me to write that first novel is I was learning how to do it. And I came up with a method that worked for me, followed it. It worked pretty well, and I was off and running. And since then, I've fallen in love with fiction. It's what I do most of the time.
It's because there's so many possibilities, I think. Because I write fiction, too. It's like, there's so many possibilities you can do with fiction. Like, there's so many things, like, in so many different ways you can inspire, motivate, and in different ways you never thought you'd be able to. By the way, I gotta say, Shane MacDougall sounds like the name of the guy who would lead a Loch Ness Monster TV show on History Channel right now.
Yes, I know. I was tempted to try to cultivate a Scottish accent to go with it, but I felt I was a little too pretentious.
Oh, no, it would have been perfect. Are you kidding me? It would have been amazing. You're like, if you're gonna go for it, go for the full mile. Don't do half.
Yeah, the only problem with the Scottish accent is it's actually a lot harder than it sounds. And the real Scots, you can't understand a goddamn word they're saying. And I am Scottish, you know. My wife and I were in Scotland, and we even stopped for directions once. I swear to God, the guy that came out of the back of this big manor house, out of, I guess, the workroom, looked like the bald mutant from The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Leather apron and everything. And I'm like, well, we're going to die. That's, you know, it's... Go to Scotland, see the world, get buried in an unmarked grave, yay.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere, they're never going to find you.
Oh, yeah, and we asked him for directions, and he rattled off something that I'm relatively sure was actually the English language, but I didn't understand a word he said. And we're like, well, thank you, we're going to flee now, you know.
Yeah, we're going to flee. Oh, there's wolves down there. Oh, no.
Yes, and by the way, are you actually a radioactive mutant? Because you're selling that real hard, you know?
Oh, God. That'd be an... Oh. You know, we live in a time now where I remember before they would not do they wouldn't do subtitles for, like, anyone speaking Scottish.
Oh, yeah.
Now we'd have them, because I'm like, oh, that's stupid. And then a word pops up, you're like, I have no idea what they just said.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. So. Well, man, it's truly... I mean, Scotland, by the way... That sounds amazing. Is it beautiful there? Like, I've always wanted to go.
It is insanely beautiful there. Yeah. We did I did a book tour of Scotland, England, and Wales some years ago. And, man, we spent weeks just driving around the UK. It was absolutely beautiful. But Scotland is, you know, I could feel my warrior genes rising up and singing some sort of incomprehensible Scottish fight song.
I mean, I don't want to sound like racist, but bagpipes or no?
Oh, yeah, I'll do some bagpipes. Yeah. Give me some bagpipes, sure. But, yeah, and I'm descended from The brother of William Wallace. So, yeah. Of course, I think half of Scotland is because, you know, the very, very clannish group, they tended to marry amongst themselves a little too often.
Yeah, it's the more nicer version of Genghis Khan.
Yes.
More tame, more accepting version. Like, there's a lot of yeses instead of a lot of noes. We'll just leave it as that, but...
Yes, there you go.
Oh, shit. There's going to be a lot of people, right? I've just alienated a whole country.
Hey, I can speak about my own kin, so...
Fair enough. See, I'm on the German side of things. I'm like, I got 1% of Irish and 99% of German, so I don't like to look back at my family history at all.
You get the benefit of everything you say in German sounds like you're mad at people, so it must be fun to go, you know, and ask to pet somebody's puppy, you know, but in harsh German.
It's true! It's so true. Like, I did once to this girl I was dating a long time ago, and I was like, I'll speak a little bit German. I was learning German. I'll speak a little bit to you. And she's like, oh, tell me you love me. And I told her I love her, like, you know, in this calming voice in German. Her immediate reaction, less than a millisecond, was, never say that to me ever again. Yeah, it was something like that. Oh, man. But, so you... done a lot of work as a writer. When you started with journalism, but I always like to hear a little bit of more people's origin stories, because I've said it many times on the show. Like, I said mine a little bit, but as where I got working in film and also in comics. But yourself, man, how did you get into writing a little bit? Like, what's, because it's always important to hear this as like the person saying it and also the people listening. Like, how did you get into writing?
Funny, yeah. I've written in so many different genres that there's so many different origin stories. So I'll give you the quick, you know, the Cliff Notes versions of them. For journalism, for magazine features, I just, you know, I was taking a class in journalism school on magazine features, and I figured, that sounds fun. So I just pitched. And if your listeners know what a query letter is, a letter that you send to an editor telling them what you would like to write, if there are 14 things you can do wrong in a query, I did every single one of them wrong and added a few to that list, because I got the query back from the editor of Black Belt Magazine with, "Are you serious?" written in red right across the query.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. He told me later, he thought it was some of his editor friends creating deliberately the world's clumsiest query. It's like, thanks?
Thanks for motivation.
Yeah, I broke one of the rules of writing, is I called the editor to ask why he rejected me.
Oh, no.
Which, hey, it was 1978, you know, it was a gentler time.
You could easily do that. You look in a phone book.
Yeah, and after him being offended for a moment, I explained, I'm a college student, and I just took a class in magazine features, and he said, well, haven't you ever seen a sample of a query letter? I said, no, I heard about them. And it's like, ah. So he actually mailed me a sample of a query letter that another writer had used to sell something to him, and he said, use that format in the future.
Whoa.
So I did. I immediately retyped my pitch in that format, sent it back to him, which you were not supposed to do.
No. I got to say, all of this, if you tried this today, you'd get, oh, okay, you're a college student, and you'd get that far. Click.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes audacity is what sells.
That's true.
So I sent it to him, and he bought the article. And I wound up writing hundreds of articles for him, for his magazine and others, you know, in the same group of magazines, you know, Karate Illustrated, Black Belt, Inside Kung Fu, all those, for years. And became one of his go-to writers, in fact, because he found out that I could write fast. If he needed an there are times when he said, and he'll call me at 9 in the morning, you know, and say, look, I need an article in the mail this afternoon. Just send, you know, take the photos, send the unprocessed film and the article. I need it this afternoon. I need you to send it out to me this afternoon.
Oh, by shit. FedEx.
Sure. As long as the check clears.
Yeah, that is important.
Yeah. So that was how I broke into features. For fiction, it was really tough because I had never, as I said, done fiction. I didn't have an agent. The nonfiction books I had sold prior to that were all either small press or college press. You don't really use agents for that sort of stuff. But it needed an agent for fiction. So I went shopping around, sent queries to the 10 top agents representing the top writers in the genre of my first novel, which was American Gothic Horror. And wound up getting several offers of representation, and the person I picked, aside from the fact that she just seemed really cool, I picked her because she, when I told her I didn't know if my next books would be horror, I wanted to go back and forth in horror and nonfiction. I wanted to try a little of everything. She was like, yeah, bring it on. Ooh. And so I signed with her, Sarah Crow. Originally, I tried in media, now with Pippin Properties. Mm-hmm. And we've been together for between novels, nonfiction books, graphic novel collections, anthologies I've edited, and short story collections of my own, plus comics and other things. It's about 125 deals she's closed for me in time. And she closed the first deal for me in 2005, which was my first novel.
I am, like, having a mini heart attack hearing that, but I'm also like, that is brilliant. And it makes me just want to, like, after we're done recording, be like, okay, those scripts you had to type today, let's do them now. Like, this, yeah, that's, I mean, the level.
That's part of my nonfiction heritage with media, you know, writing for the media is don't think about it, go do it.
Yeah.
And just keep doing it. The best way to start is by starting.
That's true. That is true. Like, that's always a big advice. Like, I tell people who want to be a writer as well, and they're always like, oh, how do you do it? And I said, well, here's the best advice I'm going to give you. You want to be a writer? Yeah. Write it. Don't just go for it. You have to be a writer. You have to actually write, because there's so many people that we know that you've bound to have met them by now, as I have too, is, well, I want to be a writer. What have you done? Well, no, I've been wanting to be a writer for a year. Well, what have you done? Or written a poem. Okay.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of those folks, and you know, I gotta love their desire to write. But as you said, you know, you gotta put your ass in the chair and write.
Yeah.
There's no way around that component of the writing thing, because you know it's in the work, writing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like you have to do it.
Yeah. Some people just want to be known as writers. They want the prestige of it. It fits a dream they've had, you know, which is all well and good, but you still gotta write. And the other thing that happens sometimes, quite often, is when somebody will come to you and say, I've got a great story that you should write. No, you have a great story you should write. Ooh. Go write it. And I am by no means going to write that story for you.
Oh, I actually really like that. Shit. And I think we should also put in here, though, is like the ability and the motivation to write on your own, too, but not just because you have a deadline. You know, it's also helpful.
Well, I actually found a formula for that, too, back in college.
What you got?
Every day, even if I didn't yet have a sale, because back then I was writing magazine articles on spec, if I didn't have a sale, what I would do is I would set a word count every day that I could definitely make. So sometimes I was going to college, working as a bodyguard at night or a bouncer at night different times. You know, so I had a lot on my plate, plus going to the dojo and competing in boxing and wrestling. All these things were taking my time up, right? Mm-hmm. So there are times I could only write one page, one 250-word page a day. That was what I knew I could guarantee get done every day at that point. So I would set my word count at 200. And every day I almost always exceeded the 200, almost always did a page or a little more. But when I hit that word count, I would take some money and put it in a jar. It would be like a dollar every day. When I finished the first draft, I could only use that money for fun. If I missed a day, a single day, all the money had to go out and be used for bills. So it was incentive. So well, not only was it incentive to keep working, but it also equated work product, no matter how rough or ugly that work product is, with something worth getting paid for. Because, see, I knew I wanted to be a professional writer, even though it took me a long time before that was my actual day job.
Yeah.
My entire life, I've been paying myself every day for that day's work, but also setting a word count that is low enough that it doesn't pressure me, because stress is not your friend.
No.
And even now, you know, I'll finish my word count, or hit my word count, and then go put money in a vacation account or something.
That is the most brilliant thing I've heard on the show in like a year or two. And this is a weekly show. Like, that is brilliant. Like, I honestly, too, you started that in college, and money is spruce in college. So that's some serious hardcore dedication and love right there to do that then. But even now to do it, like, that's a brilliant motivator. And to people listening to the show, the thousands of you, because I know a few of you guys are writers, and I know a few of you guys work in Marvel and DC. So do that. Like, Jonathan, you've now given me the idea, and I'm going to go take this and go buy a jar at Walmart after this show.
And make sure whatever you buy yourself is fun. you know.
Yeah.
But you have to set that rule. A word count you can absolutely hit every day, mm-hmm. and you can't miss a day. Otherwise, you have to empty the jar. And one of the things, when you know, if you're in a relationship, you know that you're going to be doing something, whatever that money you're going to spend mm-hmm. is going to be for, if it's for something fun, then your family starts leaving you alone to write, like, well, how's your word count going today? Mm-hmm. You know, instead of, you know, you're not actively typing, can I now talk to you for an hour?
Yeah, that's also true. I get that a little bit of, they're like, well, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, I'm writing. And they just know. It took a long time to establish of like, okay, that means leave him be. If the music's playing, says he's writing, it's time. Like, just leave him be.
Ray Bradbury told me when I was a kid, writing is 99% thinking about it, and the rest is typing.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I like to do is whenever I'm thinking about it is I have this drive for each comic book series I write. I got four technically, two are out, three I can't, or the other two I can't talk about. And when I do articles, I got journals for each. It's like these little writing journals, like hard, like leather kind of sort of things. And I always write down notes and stuff like that in there. So when you open it back up, it looks like Chinese, but
it only has to make sense to you.
Yeah. Oh God, it does. People are like, what is this? Like, well, when I'm dead, you can try to translate it, and I can be like the great great grandkids is like idea fun.
Nice.
But oh man, like that's one thing. Like, I always love about it is what you're always thinking and you're always like trying to picture like, well, what's next? And when I, especially working in comics, that I found out this year, because it's my first year working in comics. And so I've always just found that love and fascination of like that love and creating the storytelling and everything like that. And as why journalism, you did mention though, Jonathan, your window's closing on this thing that you studied for, but you never did do. It was writing for a newspaper.
I understand, I was in high school only a couple of years after the Watergate scandal. Oh. So, you know, at the time, the two superheroes in the writing world were Woodward and Bernstein. Mm. I wanted to be both of them. So when I went to school, that was the hottest. But, you know, after a while, I found it, you know, discovered it really wasn't what I wanted to do. I was just, I knew I wanted to write, but writing that wasn't truly a pull for me. So I moved on.
Will you think, though, you'll ever do it? Like, just write one article for a paper?
No interest, really. The most recent article I wrote Monday was for Writer's Digest. I like magazine work. I like, you know, I'm more comfortable with working with magazine editors because I also am a magazine editor. I'm the editorial director for Weird Tales.
Oh, shit.
The relaunch of Weird Tales. We have our first issue out already. The next issue comes out in February. And, I do like the relationship between writer and editor, magazine editor. Newspaper editors, it's just not my world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I respect it, but it turns out it's not what was truly calling me.
Yeah, you didn't want the Clark Kent and Perry White sort of thing. It wasn't like that.
No. And I didn't know that I really wanted to dive that long into, like, investigative journalism was my calling, not just reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And investigative journalism, it just felt like it was going to take me away from other things I wanted to do in my life.
And it seems like you like to create stories a little bit more, too. Like, while you do like doing a little bit of, like, the magazine work and whatnot, I mean, you do, not a little bit, but you like doing magazine work, it seems like there's that niche in you that wants to create a story.
Yeah. And, I'm a story guy to begin with, but I just didn't know those stories were going to be fiction. So a lot of my magazine features are very conversational in structure. So there's, as if I'm talking to someone, which has a more dialogue sense to it, as opposed to, you know, straight, you know, this is burning down, here's who died. So
that's true. Now we have to touch upon it, man, is the works in comics and whatnot, because I think it's such a brilliant thing at what you've done. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I do have to ask this though, is what was it like having your book on Free Comic Book Day? Because I've never been able to talk to anybody, neither one of my friends in the businesses or anything like that. None of them have had a Free Comic Book Day book out there. What was that like?
Yeah, that was surreal. I mean, that was how we launched V-Wars. And it was nuts. They moved a ton of those books. And It really got people hooked on the V-Wars concept. So a lot of them not only followed the rest of the series, but went back and read the prose books, which, you know, were these shareable anthologies. So it was a big event, but it was fun going to comic book stores and getting into that whole, you know, free comic book vibe. It's like a big party that day.
Oh, God, yeah. And, excuse me, I did a booth last year locally here in Arizona because they were doing this big celebration sort of thing. I did one for the show and whatnot. And I was invited, and I was like, okay, cool. And we were part of it. And actually, because I used to just go there as a fan and just be like, hey, picking up the books, everyone seems happy and having a good time. But actually being there and being a part of it and seeing all the people come in and then people coming up talking to you and such, like, it is such a wonderful, beautiful thing. And there's those books in there where you're like, okay, I'm so glad people get, like, there's a series, like an indie series, and they put them in there. And I think it's wonderful and beautiful because indie work, I think, needs to get more of a limelight on it. I've always said that.
Yeah, always agree.
Oh, it's...
Big fan of indie comics.
And it's not, it may sound biased because I'm an indie comic writer now, but I'm not being it. It's true. I've always thought it, like...
There's a lot of good stuff that comes out of it. And also, the different aspects of comics, too. I mean, you've got, you know, indie comics in print, you got web comics, you got webtoons, you know, which is something I'm involved in now. Do you know about webtoons?
I do. What is that like?
It's pretty great. They're adapting my teen post-apocalyptic zombie series, Rotten Ruin. And debuts January 12th, I think. But, it, you know, these are comics formatted for your phone. And most people don't realize that Webtoons, like, is the biggest comic book company out there. 100 billion downloads of their of episodes of their comics.
You have got to be shitting me. Really?
Oh, no. They are the big dog. But because it's on the phone and not in bookstores or comic book stores, it doesn't get tracked the same way. So a lot of people don't realize how big a thing it is. But Webtoons is massive.
Wow, I've been hearing more and more about it. And I think I have a Webtoons account too, if I remember correctly, because there's a few things I was reading on there. Yes, I do, actually. So I'm part of a billion. So I'm like thinking, like, I just never knew. I saw commercials at one point. I know that I saw so many things on YouTube. It just, like, I popped up, people like, download this, and I did, and I read a few things in there. I'm like, they're brilliantly done.
They do a great job with them, and I'm pretty delighted that my first Webtoon is an adaptation, a really good adaptation by Taylor Grant of Rotten Ruin.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very happy with the adaptation, really happy with it.
Yeah.
And, so that's a lot of fun. Who knows? I might even write for them at some point. I had taken a couple of years off from comics, mostly because it was 2 years where I was writing 4 novels each year.
Oh, shit.
So, you know, it was like, comics are fun, but, you know, novels make you more money.
That is true. That is very, very true.
But so I took a couple years off, but then I came back. I did a my first new comic after a while was Road of the Dead. It was a prequel to what had been George A. Romero's last script for his last zombie movie, and they asked me if I'd like to do the prequel. The movie will never get made. Mm-hmm. He died before he finished writing it, and the version of it that I read wasn't really strong enough for investors to throw money into it.
Mm.
It needs, because the person who took it over was not really a writer of George's quality. He was somebody who knew more some of the subject matter. There was a lot of deals with cars and other things. It's hence the name Road of the Dead.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out, but I had fun doing the comic.
Yeah.
And great art team with it, and that got me back into comics, and now I'm doing Pandemica, my new comic for IDW, and I've done a new V-Wars comic, you know, this year, and I've got a couple other projects coming up, which, you know, as you are familiar with the phrase, can't talk about.
Oh, God, yeah. the worst enemy of a creative is an NDA. Like, it really is. Although it's good.
They're going to be fun projects, though. And including one that actually I can talk about. I just can't continue the tales. I had written a Wizard of Oz story for an anthology some years ago.
Wow. And,
that. Yeah, it was John Joseph Adams edited the anthology called Oz Reimagined. Mm-hmm. And I did a story of, now mind you, my first impulse when they asked me to do a Wizard of Oz story is me being me. So I'm thinking, okay, Tin Man gets the heart of a serial killer, goes on a rampage, you know, bloodbath Oz.
Love it.
Much as that would have been fun to write, and I still may write it for a niche audience, it's not really in the keeping of what Oz is.
I mean, depends. It depends.
I mean, I'm thinking about who actually reads the Oz books. They're little kids.
That's true.
Yeah. So I wanted to honor that. So I wrote a story about a little winged monkey girl whose wings are too small for her to fly. So she goes to buy magic traveling shoes so she can see all the places her wings wouldn't take her. And it's cute. I'm like, I don't do.
Yeah, that seems like a complete left turn for you. That's just like, here, we want you to like be a Mickey Mouse for a little bit. Like, wait a minute here. Like, wait a minute.
This is sometimes where opportunities come from, because the story was very well received. The reviewers, you know, all the major reviewers pulled that story out as saying it's, you know, very close to the feeling of Oz. Mm. And roll forward, you know, several months, and I get a reach out from the estate of L. Frank Baum. The creator of Wizard of Oz,
yeah,
saying that they love the story and they are going to henceforth add it to the official chronology of Oz. Oh, it is now a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. Well, so that happened.
Wow, that's just got to be one of those things where, one, you would never expect that, ever, and two, holy shit, I'm in history right now.
I may have ugly cried. I'm not entirely admitting it, but it's possible.
It may have happened. No one will know for sure, except maybe for family.
Yeah, no, there were no witnesses.
No, but, no.
So now there's a comic book company I'm not going to name yet because they haven't made their official announcement, but there's a new company that wants me to maybe do an adaptation of it as a graphic novel. So that could be a whole bunch of fun to do.
Hey, folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada, though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, you know. Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least they are for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show.
And I'm probably going to do it.
Which, by the way, would sell. Say the least, yes. Here. That would sell.
And it would be fun to do, you know, I've got a lot of friends who have kids, you know. Mm-hmm. My editor of my Joe Ledger series has a couple of kids. The editor at IDW, where I do stuff, has kids. The guy from the new company that wants me to do it has kids. My own son's grown; he's in his 30s, but still, you know, I want to be able to write something that that kids can enjoy, genuinely enjoy. So that should be fun.
Yeah, because they matter in comics.
Weird directions that a career can take. You never know where the hell your career is going to go.
Oh, God, no. You never do. I talked about it recently on a show called Film World I host. And because being in comics, and I decided why not, and working in film too, do a podcast on it. And I talked about it majorly with the guy the other day, was you do never know when you're in the creative arts, no matter what job you do, where you're going to go. Like, there's no... Like, 2 years ago, I was just working in film. If you would have told me I would have been a writer, publisher, and almost now 4 published comic books out for a company, like, are you kidding? There'd be no way. None.
Yeah. And sometimes it comes at you totally out of the blue, like a couple examples. my agent and I had been strategizing on how to get on the radar of Marvel Comics. This is back 2008. And, you know, we didn't know anyone in the company. And, I hadn't even hit the New York Times bestsellers list yet. So my career had just, I've only been publishing fiction for a couple of years. I was, still an outsider. And then out of the blue, I get a phone call from Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics.
Holy shit.
He had been traveling from L.A. to New York, forgot his Kindle, so he just grabbed a book that he liked the cover of off, in the airport kiosk, read on the plane, said, I like this, and he just called me out of the blue to say, hey, I read Patient Zero. Any chance you might be possibly interested in writing for Marvel?
Jesus.
Give me a couple seconds to go, think about that.
let me go cry for a minute. And be like, yes.
Yeah. Luckily, this was all on the phone because I have a really good phone voice.
Yeah.
But physically, in my office, I was doing the Snoopy dance. that's a site that's not gonna go away anytime soon. I'm just saying.
No, that door is locked, and it's like, all right. I heard the door lock. Leave Jonathan alone.
So that happened. That came out of the blue. And stuff like that happens. And then with one of the other projects I was doing, I had written a novella called The Family Business for an anthology edited by Christopher Golden. Mm-hmm. It was a zombie anthology. And I did a novella. It was for adults. It was an adult anthology. Mm-hmm. But my story kept getting reviews as a really good story for younger readers, which I had no intention of ever doing. And my agent, who usually doesn't handle short fiction, said I wanted to read it. And she read it and said, this is the opening of a young adult novel. I'm like, no, it's not. I have never won one of those discussions with her, by the way.
Oh, you always lose? It's like, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, and it's always for the better because she actually does know that part of the business better than I do. It's her job.
Yeah.
So she said, let me just take the opening of it and shop it around and see if we can get some interest. I'm like, all right, if you like, want to waste your time, you go right ahead. And one auction later, Simon & Schuster drew the best deal, and the book got renamed, the story got expanded and renamed as Rotten Ruin.
Oh,
and now the seventh book in that series comes out next August, and Falcon Entertainment is developing it for a possible feature film.
Jeez.
So, you never know, you should never say never is what it boils down to.
Oh, yeah, like, you never, it's a thing of chance, and you just, and a lot of people look upon it like, why would we want to do that? Oh, that's just so, there's a big thing of, like, chance and risk and all that. It's like, yeah, but it's what we love to do, and it's who we are. Why are we going to not be that?
Yeah, I had Audible reach out to me beginning of last year and say, look, we'd like you to do an original short story just for Audible, original story, and we'd like to give it away for free. Like, okay. I mean, turned out they actually paid me for it. They said, yeah, but I'll give it away for free for a couple of weeks before Halloween as your Halloween present to anyone who likes good horror. Like, all right, that sounds cool. Did that, and then, of course, after that, it went on sale. They got Scott Brick, award-winning narrator, to read it. A story called Lullaby. It wound up being the number one short story on Audible for all of last year.
Jeez.
You never know what's going to happen if somebody asks. And one last story about Out of the Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I had the flu one year, early 2009, I think it was. And I like to marathon monster movies when I'm sick.
That's so brilliant.
Facebook, I was saying, hey, not feeling well, want to have a werewolf movie marathon. What are your choices? And we start talking about werewolf movies and what are the better ones and so on. And it was one of those long conversations. And then I get a phone call from this woman claiming to be the vice president of licensing for Universal Pictures.
Oh,
she said, my assistant follows you on social media and saw that you were talking about werewolf movies and that you're a writer. And by this point, I was not a New York Times bestseller, but at this point I was getting some notice.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, would you possibly, do you know that we're remaking The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro? And I'm like, yeah, I'd heard it in the trades. She said, well, we don't have a novel. There's never been a Wolfman novel. And I'm like, Dracula Frankenstein, there was never a novel. So would you write that for us? So we worked out a deal with, you know, become agent, Vaughn worked out a deal. Mm-hmm. And that went on to become my first New York Times bestseller.
Jesus.
So you never know where the career hits are going to come from. What matters is whether you follow an opportunity or not. Yeah. One of the sayings I like telling my writing students is, you can't get hit by a car if you're not playing in traffic.
That's true. That's why you get paid the big bucks and the awards. Because like,
well, it's brilliant. You know, you can't even have that as a possibility if you're not out there, you know, ready for it. Social media has been an amazing thing for just establishing, you know, my love of the genres I write in. Mm. And my fun, you know, I have a lot of fun interacting with fans. You know, all of that is good for, it's fun to begin with, but it's also good for your career because you're not just a name on a dust jacket, you're a person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and, yeah. And it's like social media is the new business card, to say the least, too.
Yeah, very much so. So, and I love it. I devote 10 minutes out of every writing hour to social media.
Yeah.
I have my Echo app, or Alexa app, just tell me, you know, it's time. And boom, I go back into writing.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, I love it, too, because it's such a fun thing to be interactive with the fans. Like, I take some time. One of the things I do with it is, with social media, is I always tell people, like, if you're not, like, a sexual predator or anything like that, reach out, and I'll talk to you. And
yeah, I mean, I've made genuine friends all over the world through social media.
Yeah,
and definitely deepened my exposure as writers as well. Yeah. Because my career, my fiction career, kind of got started around the time of social media. I mean, I jumped in back when it was MySpace and Friendster.
Oh, I haven't heard Friendster in such a long time. Shit. Oh,
that's so I've been writing the social media thing, and I dig it. You know, I really dig it.
Yeah. Hell, one of the things I like to do with fans every now and then is they reach out and they seem like they're real, for one, and genuine person. And one, I like a lot of people who are like, hey, can you take a look at this indie film script or whatnot? Like, hey, would you mind writing this? And then I say, sure. Like, I take a day or something like that. I'm like, all right. I like writing film scripts. I don't mind it. I love doing it, actually, in a sense. And or editing or stuff like that too, and I put it back out there, and like it gets made and it gets good fan reviews and stuff like that, and they're like, hey, thanks for the help. It's like, yeah, no problem. Like, I help fans in every way I can. If someone's like, hey, you're pretty good motivational, like I need some help or anything like that, like, and it's such a wonderful, people are like, why do you do that? You're gonna get weirdos. I'm like, yeah, I do, but it's one of those things where if you can help change a fellow creative's way or give them maybe that little bit of a nudge or give them some help or something, you never know where that's gonna go.
That's so true, because, I mean, we've all had help along the way. I mean, point to this dramatic thing that happened to me in the early 70s when I was just going from grade school to junior high. Mm-hmm. My middle school librarian was the secretary for two clubs of professional writers, one that met in New York and one that met in Philly. Now, she knew how much I wanted to be a writer, and back then I thought I wanted to write fictions before Watergate. She... you know, would drag me along to the meetings. The New York one, the Philadelphia one was the science, it was the fantasy crowd. It was Sprague de Camp and Lynn Carter and the guys doing the Conan stuff. Mm. So that was fun. The New York crowd was basically whoever was in town at the time, because this is in 1970, way before the internet. Books were launched in New York. Travel to New York was a lot less expensive, so most writers would go to New York to launch their main writers would go to New York to launch their books.
Yeah.
So at the first party I went to, you know, it was Ray Bradbury, Richard Matheson, Harlan Ellison, Alvin Davidson, James Blish.
Oh.
I mean, these guys were all there. Now, mind you, I didn't know any of them because I was reading a different type of fiction.
Mm.
So the librarian introduced me to Ray Bradbury. She's like, this is Ray Bradbury. And I'm like, oh, do you write too? Richard Matheson lost his shit when I said that.
God. Good way or bad way? Like anger or just like laughing?
No, he was laughing so hard. He was crying. It was great. And Ellison, you know, came over and gave me a hug. He's like, dude, that is the best thing I've heard all day long. I'm like, okay, you're a strange man giving me a hug. So, you know, that's a thing. But yeah. And Bradbury's response was, I've taken a swing at once or twice. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, though? Yeah. But then you realize, and that moment hits you like a brick wall. Where you're like,
oh, my God.
Oh, shit.
And they, you know, over the next 3 years, while I was going up to these events, you know, they were there often because they were, you know, always launching something. You know, they were in town to do a promo for a Twilight Zone script that were Outer Limits or or Star Trek or something. You know, there's always something going on. And plus their new books. So I got to see them a lot. And they mentored me quite a bit over those 3 years. And jump forward years later, I got the last ever cover quotes for, I think, either of them. Matthews and Bradbury both gave me cover quotes, and they missed the deadline for getting them in for the first printing of Ghost Road Blues, my first novel, but they're on the 10th anniversary edition. Turns out the editorial assistant who had gotten the quotes had left, and they didn't realize they were there until they started preparing the 10th anniversary edition and found it among her emails, and they're like, oh, crap, that's Bradbury Matheson. I broke down and cried when they told me that they had gotten those cover quotes. By the time I found out about it, both those guys were dead. I'm like, I thought the window had closed for me to get my books to them. You know, after all the advice they gave me, but it turns out it did actually happen. And they were really wonderful quotes.
Oh, it's beautiful, man. That's one of the things that just hits you right in the feels, and you're like, all right, this is another thing that you use to keep going, and to be like, let's do this, like. We live such a wonderful life, you know that? Like, we're lucky. Don't get me wrong. I want to put that out there. We know we're lucky.
but I'm also, you know, I'm lucky or not, I'm grateful every day.
Oh God, yes,
for what happened, because you know I'm living the actual dream. I'm a full time writer. I make stuff up in my head and I get paid for it. You know, so I'm a professional daydreamer, and I live in Southern California now. I have a TV show launching in 8 days, you know? So, I'm grateful for everything that's happened.
That's true. And I kind of want to talk about TV shows with you a little bit, good man, because... Sure. And I wanted to save this part to the end because, like, you have just so much to talk about sort of thing. You're such a wonderful guy, and I've heard so many good things about you. And... That's why I definitely
don't want... I pay people to say nice things about me.
It sounded very Kim Jong-un-like.
it's money well spent.
So that 10 grand a year, very well spent, indeed.
Tax deduction, you know.
Oh, got you. Yeah, this... Like, what is this here? Payoffs? Like, oh, don't look in upon that. Ever since I read that Free Comic Book Day and I read a lot of V-Wars, I knew I wanted you on the show. And there's also one of those books... Because V-Wars and Paper Girls are books where I've started reading them, and I'm like, how the hell is this not a TV show or movie? And we're getting both now.
Well, it's funny, the process, because, I mean, the original V-Wars book, the first volume of the prose series, came out in 2012.
Oh, does that long ago?
And, IDW Entertainment, which is part of IDW Publishing, part of the whole IDW company, began shopping it around, and they had a pilot script written by someone else, and it was a good script, but it was an expensive script. And, you know, the cost of it, you know, was prohibitive, and the streaming services weren't really there then. So it died, it came back, and, you know, I had just about given up on it. And I was getting off the plane in Atlanta to go to Dragon Con, and I get a phone call from a producer saying, well, we just sold V-Wars, and I'm thinking, great, some third-rate TV network, the last person who didn't reject it now wants it for $5. And I'm like, Netflix.
Oh.
And I'm like, Netflix, you say? You know,
yes.
I don't know how to respond to that one. I'm at an airport, you know, I may have been inappropriately loud.
fuck yes! And, is that what I like?
Yeah. And I'm just going to an event where I'm going to be seeing 80,000 people doing 15 panels, and they said, oh, but you're not allowed to tell anyone yet.
Oh, God.
Thank you. Why not just come and pluck my fingernails out, too? Because that will hurt less.
Yeah, and it's like...
They're going to sit on this news.
Oh,
you know?
It's like we're going to castrate you, and we're going to put, like, an incredibly wonderful supermodel in front of you. Good luck!
Yeah.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah. Have fun with it. So, but yeah, and I was not executive producer originally on the show.
That's a shame.
So I was not part of the writer's room. They did... reach out to me quite a bit, and then I became really good friends with our lead actor, Ian Somerhalder, from Vampire Diaries, and several of the other actors, and also one of the primary director, Brad Turner. So I got to know these guys, and you know, I was invited to the table read, which was real as fuck. Sitting there, seeing actors that you've seen in a bunch of shows being the characters you created. Oh, I mean, Adrian Holmes from Arrow, Laura Vandervoort from
Everything.
Peter Atterbridge from The Expanse and Orphan Black. Michael Gray Eyes from the most recent season of True Detective. He was the junk man. He was also in Fear of the Walking Dead season 3 or 4. He was the Native American, the leader of Native American group in that show. All these actors that I know from different shows, Nikki Reed from Twilight, you know, who's Ian's wife, and suddenly they're there because I wrote something. I'm like, this does not continue.
Yeah, like, wait a minute. And I think in any sense, seeing it come to life, like, in any, like, even just the table read is, it's like, what? Especially big name people. Like, if they're a bunch of indie folks, you're like, this is still amazing. But they're people you know with a passion, so it's one of those things like, oh God, what does this mean? Like, I'm like, it's a new world.
It is a brand new world, and it was a very welcoming world, which was really wonderful. They made me feel very at home. Actually, here's one of the weird things about it, and this is going to sound like bragging, but it's not, so I just need to front load that.
Yeah, go here, go ahead.
When I got there to the table read, they, you know, and I was introduced as the writer of the source material, they gave me a standing ovation.
Holy shit.
See, what was pointed out to me, and this, you know, Ian leaned over and pointed this out to me, he says, dude, everyone here has a job because of this show. Which means that you are responsible for everyone here having a paycheck for the next X number of months.
You know, Rob, that's so true.
And it never really occurred to me to think of it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I'm just so happy I've got a TV show, and they're, I mean, and yet they're pointing out this is, you know, a great employment benefit, opportunity for these writers. For these actors, rather, and these directors, and the technical people, and everyone else.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it had never occurred to me. So then some months later, about a month later, rather, my wife and son and I were flown up to Sudbury in northern Ontario to watch the first week of filming.
Jesus.
That was nuts.
Do you, like, just hold back tears when you're watching them come to life?
Well, I was, as Adrian Holmes, the guy who plays our lead vampire, said, I was a kid in a candy shop the entire time. He said, you couldn't slap the grin off that man's face.
I'm bad, like, and it's one such an epic storyline for these actors, too. And then for you, and so it's like everyone there was incredibly happy. And they're like, they got the jobs, they're getting paid, but they're also bringing to life such a fun, creative story. And you get to be there like, holy shit. I'm like, God. These people, it's like you're never taking it to, you're taking it to heart and being like, this is just seeing my work come to life. And I gotta imagine, there's no way, like, you would catch me wherever I am in a hotel or something like that, crying for 10 minutes beforehand if I saw any of my creator owned books like come to life in any sort of fashion. Like,
it is extremely nuts, and again, very humbling, because, you know, you have to make sure that you with everything you do, from interacting with them and the press and everything else, you know, honor the artistry that they're bringing to it as well. So what happened is, as we roll forward, Ian made a big case for me to become executive producer on the show, which I now am.
Which makes sense. That honestly makes so much sense. Like, why not have the guy who created and wrote it on the show? Like, wait a minute.
That was his argument right there.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. So they got me involved. They gave me homework, which is fun. So, I had to go through the episodes in rough cut and pick better titles than the original writers would come up with. That was my first homework. And I was like, I'm sitting in a hotel room near FanX in Salt Lake. And, you know, after days of panels and so on, I came back and that, and I have homework to do. I have to watch my show. What a shame.
Yeah.
Let me have some really good breath before I do this.
Terrible. How do you do it?
Yeah, so that was nuts.
Oh.
And if we get picked up for second season, there's a very good chance that I'll be involved in some of the writing.
Which makes sense, too. And I do know, when I mentioned to a few people, a few, like, uber fans of the show and whatnot, I said, hey, I'm bringing on Jonathan Mayberry on the show. And they're like, V-Wars? And I'm like, yeah. And some people didn't know that they loved the series. And they had, like, wait a minute, it's coming to a TV show? I'm like, yeah, it's coming to Netflix. I'm like, what? It's like, and people are blown away and extremely hyped for it, especially them. I am like, about fucking time, you tell me. But
it is strange how some things can. I mean, when we posted it, we got, you know, hundreds of thousands of responses. I think Ian got over a million responses. Jesus. From the social media, and yet there are even fans of his who were surprised when another announcement was made later on. A lot of it depends on when you look at your feed.
It's true.
You know, if you don't look at your feed at that moment, something else will come along and push it out of visibility. Yeah. So, you know, it's social media has to be massaged.
Oh yeah, it's always changing, so always be adaptable to that. And it's this whole thing with such. We are coming to the end of the show, Jonathan, but I do have to. I've been pondering this and trying to figure it out. I don't think I've been able to. So you're obviously a huge fan of horror, as we talked about, and so same as Maya, and I'm a huge monster fan as well. What is your favorite type of monster, you think, that you like, or is it your favorite, and maybe is it one that you love to write about?
Werewolves?
Even
though I love zombies, love vampires. Here's the thing about werewolves. There are some werewolf, like my favorite werewolf movie, which is also my favorite horror movie, and favorite horror action movie is Dog Soldiers.
Oh,
love that movie.
It's absolutely so brilliant. Oh.
And I was so hoping for a sequel. They never did one. Great cast. You know, I watch that 3 times a year. But also, my favorite bit of supernatural folklore, and I've written 5 nonfiction books of supernatural folklore, one is Shane MacDougall and others under my own name. Mm. My favorite bit of folklore is the Benedanti. These are families, some of them going back to Etruscan times, who claim that they are werewolves, that they're from a lineage of werewolves, and that at night they would turn into werewolves and go into essentially hell or hell dimension and fight evil.
Holy shit. And
this is an actual legend that, I mean, there are records of it in Catholic Church documents going back hundreds of years. And in fact, one of these Benedanti was captured by the Inquisition and tortured because they wanted him to admit that as a monster, a vowed monster, that he was actually on the side of hell, you know, against heaven. And he said, no, my father, my grandfather, my grandmother, we're all good guy werewolves. And the Inquisition is known for being moderately enthusiastic when it comes to getting you to make certain confessions. They could not break him. So after trying with earnest, they said, well, the only way you could endure this is if you had the power of heaven. So we are letting you go. And they gave him a nickname, the Hound of God, which is the coolest fucking nickname for a werewolf.
Oh, my God, yes.
Now, mind you, no, none of them saw him transform, but still. So I created a character named Sam Hunter, who is a private investigator who is one of these, a descendant of one of these Benedanti families. Mm-hmm. And whenever he takes a client, he essentially accepts them into his pack. And you'd better not fuck with his pack. So I did a whole bunch of those stories. And in fact, one of the Audible collection of that became the number one Audible collection for a while. It's just, you know, people love werewolves, but I love werewolves. So yeah,
man.
Plus, my first New York Times bestseller was, in fact, The Wolfman.
You're appealing to my heart, Jonathan. Because other than my favorite monsters are kaiju, but if the ones that aren't kaiju,
a lot.
Oh, werewolves! I'm with you, man. With you 100%. Like that. Like you're really hitting the heart. But have you ever heard of? It's still werewolves. And I know you would love this, and it's only one episode of the series, but have you ever heard of the show Love, Death, and Robots?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So did you ever watch it?
Yeah, I've watched every episode of it. The werewolf one was fantastic.
Okay, that's what I was getting to. I'm like, I wonder if he knows about this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, another one of the reasons I love social media, I'll throw up on social media, like, what don't I know, or what should I watch, or give me some, you know, and somebody mentioned Love, Death, and Robots a while back. And I sat down to watch it. I'm like, holy crap, this is great. And all the different art styles and different ways of presenting science fiction and horror is fantastic.
Right. And the werewolf, I 100% that werewolf episode sold me because of the one, because of the art style. And I'm like, this isn't real, like, this is so realistic, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And then like, and then like, oh, they're werewolves in Afghanistan. I'm like, why has this not been done yet? Like, why do you think it's this long? Because it's I don't know. There are so many possibilities.
Great. Very great.
Oh.
And so that's for someone who really wants to see what you know, a contemporary werewolf story looks like. That's a good one.
Okay.
Also recommend a werewolf film that does not get a lot of love, which is Silver Bullet. I thought it was really good.
That's true. Oh, you're bringing me back.
You know, a lot of people don't like it, but I love that movie.
Well, a lot of people... Okay, this is not a werewolf talk podcast, because I got to say, a lot of people are like 50-50 on werewolf movies. If they're like, it's just a wolf, man, like, no. There's a lot of story and depth to this shit. Like, they're like, well, it's got to have vampires. Like, no, it doesn't. It's kind of cool seeing monsters fight, but you want to... Like, there's so many things to do with werewolves and wolfman. Like, I don't think the stories are ever going to end. Like, people may get tired of zombies, which we've kind of seen, but... People are never going to get tired of werewolves because they're so cool.
That's one thing about what we do as writers. I mean, if, as long as we can bring a fresh perspective to it, there's no reason any of the classic monsters should ever fade. I mean, you know, look what they did with Pacific Rim. I mean, they made and the new Godzilla films.
Yes.
I mean, for a long time, you know, guys stomping around in rubber suits was considered silly, and then somebody said, well, here's how about we don't do silly, how about we do the most really good, high-quality films, and everybody's like, holy shit, they're great. Marvel movies, same thing, you know, superhero movies were always campy and dumb, and then, you know, first, the Dark Knight films were good, but they weren't in canon, and then Marvel said, hey, let's do the entire Marvel universe as a series of movies with high quality, and let's have some fun, but also tell good stories. And now that's the biggest franchise of movies in history.
Oh, so, yeah. Number one best movie of all time, Avengers Endgame. Who would have guessed?
Yeah.
Who would
have? And also, by the way, just a little side note.
What'd you got?
I'm friends with the stunt team for Winter Soldier and for a bunch of the other Marvel stuff. The guy, like the stunt double for Doctor Strange and the stunt double for Winter Soldier are fans of my Joe Ledger thrillers. So we've become really good friends, and their latest movie was Zombieland 2.
Oh.
But it's a hell of a team, and we're going to be hopefully doing some work together, maybe in the future with one of the projects I can't yet discuss.
I hope to God that, because I'm like thinking, I'm like, wait, so you know people in film, you have a TV show coming out. Wait a minute here, it's like it kind of seems like no brainer to bring those guys on board.
Yeah, I've got some fun stuff going on right now, it'll be fun to work with people who are not only, you know, professionals, but also actually do like what you write. And these guys, the stunt team is just amazing. They were the stunt team for Punisher, and they even got Johnny Bernthal to read my Joe Ledger thriller. So,
man, you were living the writer's dream, Jonathan. Like, Jesus. Well. I definitely got to say, we are coming into the show here, man, because I didn't want to take too much of your time, but I got to say, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, man, invite me back again.
Yeah, like, you're always welcome back. Like, I got to say, it's always fun as a writer to be able to, like, talk writing stuff, and as you're a fellow horror fan, a monster fan, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, you're always welcome back.
Maybe in February I'll come back and talk about Weird Tales.
Oh.
Our second issue will be out in February.
Oh, 100% with Planet.
Yeah, we got some great stuff. I'm curating each issue, so basically I'm handpicking the stories for each issue.
Ooh.
And we got some great stuff coming up, so we can talk about that when the next issue comes out.
Hell yeah, I'm down with that. Now, because social media, we talked about it, where can people find you at on it?
I'm easy to find if you spell my last name right. Everybody wants to put a Y in the middle of my name. They want to spell it M-A-Y-B-E-R-Y. It's... you know, restrain yourself. Y is there so the English can figure out how to pronounce a Scottish last name. M-A-B-E-R-R-Y. Long A Lincoln Bakery, Mayberry. If you look up Jonathan Mayberry, you will find my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, website, and everything else.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. And we're always having fun somewhere.
Okay. Listen, you are doing so many fun things. And it's also like if people want to follow your entire career, that's like a whole day worth of looking.
It's been an interesting and varied career.
Oh, yeah. But you keep on doing what you're doing, man. Like, and like, you're still going at it. You're not giving up. You're staying creative, which I always tell people to do. That's, like, my best thing I always tell people, and people always take it to heart, is, like, always stay creative, because you just, you got to, and you're never giving up on it, and it's a beautiful thing to see, man. And
yeah, it's the best job in the world, man.
Fuck yeah. Now, we've talked about it, but just so people know again, what upcoming projects do you have coming up? Because I definitely want to promote your stuff here.
My new Joe Ledger thriller, Rage, just came out. And it starts a brand new series, so it's a nice entry point. If you don't have to have read the previous Ledger books, it's the first of a brand new series. I think it's the best thriller I've ever written. Mm-hmm. And the reviews are really good. The fans are really digging it. So Rage is out. I have a new comic, Pandemica, which the third issue is coming out next month, yeah. I think. And it's about a group of corrupt folks creating ethnic-specific bioweapons for ethnic cleansing.
And Jesus, that sounds real.
actually using existing gene editing technology to manage it. So it's really not all that science fiction as much as it's a cautionary tale. And a group, of course, that is trying to stop them. And so it's a five-issue miniseries. The third issue will be out in a month. And then what else we got coming up? Next fall, I have a tribute anthology, an official tribute anthology for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Don't Turn Out the Lights. And it includes everybody from R.L. Stine, creator of Goosebumps, to Brendan Reichs and Cami Garcia, and all these fantastic writers who have written stories for it. That'll be out next fall. And I have two more novels coming out in the next year. Lost Roads, which will be out in August. Three novels. Lost Roads is the seventh book of the Rotten Ruins series. It wraps that series up. Then I have Relentless, the sequel to Rage. And I have Ink, a novel about haunted tattoos that I'm currently writing. All coming out next year.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Man. All right. So, folks at home, you have a plethora of things to choose from here of what you want to read. Or just read it all. Either one. And also, when does V-Wars come out again? Just so people know.
The entire first 10-episode season drops on Netflix December 5th.
Sweet. Sweet. Oh, very close, even as of this recording.
8 days.
Oh, God. I'm just like debating whether or not how I'm going to figure out how to binge it all, because I really want to.
Yeah, 10 hours is a long time.
That's so true.
At least pause to hydrate or something.
Go to the bathroom. Like, where is he? Where's the code at? I don't know. He looks like Jabba the Hutt right now, though. I don't know what to do.
But I tell you, it's a heck of a good show, and I can't wait to. If we get renewed for second season, I'm going to help plot out and write the second season. So.
Sweet. So that means folks at home, share the show and watch it plenty of times.
Yeah, you definitely have to watch the show, because the analytics are not just tuning in, but watching whole episodes. We think if you watch the show, you'll see a lot of people you recognize in really interesting creative roles. Mm-hmm. So come and join us. The Vampire Wars is about to start.
Fuck yeah, you couldn't put it any better, man. Folks at home, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter or at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. And I can't talk about a lot of stuff coming out right now. I wish I could. So you're like, so everyone tune in to Jonathan, because I'm under so many NDAs. Like, so many.
Better than being under none.
Oh, that's true. Oh, God. That's a scary thought right there. Alrighty. Now, Jonathan, any final words to the folks at home?
Yeah, if you guys want to come and play a little bit, you know, I'm always doing something weird and interesting on my Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, so come along and have fun. But, if you write, don't let anything stop you. If you read everything, even go outside your genre, you'll find exciting new voices everywhere you go.
To the end. I love it. Alrighty. And to everyone listening at home or wherever you may be, stay classy, comic fans.